Yes. It's okay.
Yes. Is it recording?
Okay. It is. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitya Nanda Adwaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadhir Gaur Bhaktavinda. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitya Nanda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasa Dhir Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga,
Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga,
Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Yad Waita Gadadhar Srivasa Dhir Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari,
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja
Bihari, Gopi Jana Balava Girivaradari, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari,
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. You see Radha Madhava Astasaki ki, Shri Jamuna Mai ki, Hare Krishna Mahamantra ki, Gaurava Banandari Vom. Narayanam namaskritya Naram chaiva narotamam Devim sarasvatim vyasam Tato jaya mudiraye Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya
So this is Srimad Bhagavatam, right? There's so many Vedic literatures, agamas, what else we got? Nigamas, yeah. Itihasas, Puranas, right? Ayurveda, Gandharva Veda, Dhanurveda, Veda, Vastu Veda, Granit, yeah, all these different aspects of Vedic knowledge. In comparison to the other classical literature in the world, the Vedic literature is enormous, like that, yeah? All aspects. But, Nigama Kalpa Tarora Galitam Palam, yeah? The essence of all these is the Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami actually begins presenting the philosophy, the medicine, the enlightenment to Maharaj Parikshit. Right? He's fasting because he's going to die in how many days? 7 days. 7 days, yes. He's not worried about rotating his tires or, stock options or things like that. He's worried about leaving. Once upon a time, there was a king, a very great, powerful king, and he had many ministers for cultural developments, land management in his kingdom, and defense against enemies, and education. But he decided he wanted a minister of stupidity, right? Mork, Mork something, Pramukh Mork, I don't know how you say that. So his ministers went around looking, and they finally found somebody who they considered was the greatest fool they'd ever seen. And they brought him to the kingdom, and the king was satisfied. So for many years, he served in this position in court as the foremost person of stupidity. And when he would do something really stupid, the king would give him a special award like that, a badge. So this went on for many years. And of course, after some time, the king got old. And then one day he called for the minister of stupidity to come to his bedside. He was lying there having trouble breathing. And he told the minister, he said, "Well, I'm going to be leaving soon." And he says, "Oh, yes?" He said, "Yes." Yes, he said, "Well, where are you going?" He said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "Oh, yeah." And he said, "Well, who will take care of you? Are the queens going to go? Can I go with you?" And the minister's going to go like normally? And he said, no, I have to make this journey alone. And he said, oh, really? And he said, well, you know, and who will take care of when you get there then? If the cooks are not going and those kind of things. He says, well, I don't know. He said, oh, amazing. And he said, well, how long have you known you had to make this journey? And he said, well, almost my whole life I knew I had to make this journey. So the fool's sitting there and a little silent. He starts to take off his badges and look at them and put them by the side of the king, one after another. And they're all lying by the king. And the king says, well, what are you doing? And he says, well, actually, I'm supposed to be the greatest fool in this kingdom. But after hearing you, you had to make this journey your whole life. You knew you had to make it. You don't know where you're going. Who's going to take care of you? So actually, you're the biggest fool in this kingdom, not me. Right? Oh. So Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit, he was preparing his whole life. In fact, before he was born even, he was preparing. You know. And so then finally when he met Sukadeva Goswami, in his proper position like that, and the first canto of Vyasadeva describes all this background. You know, the disappearance of Dhritarashtra, disappearance of the Pandavas, Kunti, Maharaj Parikshit saving the womb, everything is there. So now we're ready to listen to Sukadeva Goswami. And he's the greatest acharya, you know, greatest personality. So his book is therefore, you know, what's the word? I can't even say it in Spanish now. digno de oír. It's worthy of hearing. Worthy of hearing for anybody who wants to understand what is the unalloyed duty of somebody in life, right? That's his question. What is the unalloyed duty of a man in any circumstance? Because different circumstances, you have different things you can do, maybe not do. But it's something you have to do all the time, you know? And, you know, the basic answer is svaipum sam paro dharmo yato bhakti ad hokshaja ahoy tukiya pratihata yayatmarup supasiddhati. You know, the supreme occupational dharma duty for all living beings is that by which one can develop ecstatic emotional love for the Supreme Lord. It must be uninterrupted and unmotivated to satisfy the self. And Socrates says the same thing. Many people, this is what will satisfy you in the end, like that. And he also goes on, the sages of Naimisharanya, also hear from Suta Goswami, and Shama Eva Kikevalam. Whatever dharmas we do, as a husband, a wife, a child, a student, you know, if they don't inspire transcendental affection for hearing the messages of Vasudeva, Shama Eva Kikevalam. It is a useless waste of time. You know, useless waste of time. It's like trying to listen to the babble of the ocean on the shore and understand what it's saying. Like that. Yeah. So he's Maharaj Parikshit has met him. He's asked this question: what is the unalloyed duty of a man at every step of his life, and especially for somebody who's about to die? So then, the second canto, he begins to answer by saying that your question is glorious. You know, because it's useful for all people in all times like that. And we can't waste our times just eating and sleeping and the days going by like that. So he recommends in the first canto, the second chapter, we heard this last night, to begin by giving up all these distracting influences, all these different things, I have to take care of this and that, and this sannyas idea, living very simply. And also, too, it's good sitting a certain posture and developing certain kinds of things to purify the mind, the nervous system. Then one should meditate. What's first? Virat Rup. It's the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. In chapter 10, Arjuna says, well, you're saying so many things, but how can I really fix my mind on you in this world? I'm caught up in this and that. So many things I have to do. So then Krishna begins these vibhutimat, sattva. Among fish, I am. Among men, I am. I am the fragrance of thee. I am the taste of. Among mountains, I am. Among movable things, I am. Yeah. Yeah. Meru. Everyone messes up on that one. So these are all pantheistic things. Probably, especially everybody can appreciate the taste of water. You just go like one day without water, and you'll appreciate the taste, you know. And everybody can appreciate the light of the sun, right? Yes, enlivens us so much. You know? But so many other things like that too. So you should meditate upon these things. You do that. You just go down by the ocean and sit in your car in San Francisco and looking at it. And yeah, these thoughts start to come as you're looking at it. In the San Francisco Bay, I'm wondering like if Russian submarines are hiding under in the water there. We used to do that in the Volga, you know, just hiding. If all the water disappeared in the ocean, what would you see? Wow, you know, what's in the bay, you know? All these old boats that sunk. And if you go out like, I think it's 3 miles past the shore, there's this drop. you're walking out there and suddenly this all drops down like hundreds of feet, and beyond it is unlimited land, you know, with different sea monsters with one eye bouncing around, and his sunken treasure ships and Atlantis, and who knows what's under there, right? Who knows? Then you come to the Mindano Trench, and that's like, what, it's like 7 miles deep or something like that, you know? Creatures that, you know, have their own photophosphorescence. And all these big boats, big oil tankers. How big is an oil tanker? Is it bigger than me? Is it bigger? They're so big, they cover the entire university campus like that, you know? And then, but all these boats are floating on the ocean. Does it notice them? Does it feel, oh, what a burden? Huh? No, it's like straw. It's wow. Then you begin to appreciate. Krishna says, yeah, you want to understand me. Among bodies of water, I am the ocean. You know? So someone says, I am a god, you are a god, we are all a god. Okay. Do you know the ocean? Yeah. So this is a pantheistic meditation. It's there, and many, many different people are suggesting this. Go out, take a walk in the summertime. Take your shoes off. Walk on the earth, smell things, and you'll become purified. Feel the wind. You know? Yeah? So that's what he's recommending in the first one like that. Then in the second one, he starts to recommend then Paramatma. And the same thing in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 10. In chapter 11, then he says, let me see how you're pervading and maintaining everything as this Ekang Sena, Stito Jagat. I'm maintaining everything by one angsa, portion, a spark of my splendor. So in the next chapter, Arjuna says, chapter 11, let me see that. You know? So then he starts to describe this Paramatma meditation. He's describing, you can perceive him within your heart. You know? Beginning of the chapter, he finishes off by glorifying the root meditation a little bit more. We have a formal course on this. Some of the people are taking this course. So he says Brahma also did this root meditation. This is how he revived his original consciousness. He sat there and saw things and appreciated nature and smelled the flowers and saw the seasons changing, and that was enough for him to realize who he was like that. You know? But then he goes on to explain this Paramatma. You know, he's, I can read here what he says. Okay, and very nice. I can't cover everything here tonight, but. Yeah, he's saying, just become renounced, just live peacefully with nature. Walt Whitman, a very nice American poet, he has a very good description of the same thing. Every culture appreciates this. Are there not torn clothes lying in the common road? Do the trees which exist for maintaining others no longer give alms and charity? Do the rivers being dried up no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed? Or above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why then do the learned sages go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? Thus being fixed in meditating on this form and surrendering to God, being a part of nature, like that. One should render service unto the Supersoul situated in one's own heart by his omnipotency. Because he is the almighty personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited, he is the ultimate goal of life. And by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. Yeah. Who else but the gross materialist will neglect such transcendental thought and take to the non-permanent names only, seeing the mass of people fall in the river of suffering as a consequence of accruing the results of their own work? Yeah. People who are advanced can see the personality of Godhead residing within the body in the region of the heart and measuring only 8 inches and carrying four hands, carrying a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conch shell, and a club. His mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes spread like the petals of a lotus, and his garments, yellowish like the saffron of a kadamba flower, are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are made of gold set with jewels, and he wears a glowing headdress and earrings. His lotus feet are placed on the whorl of the lotus-like hearts of great mystics. On his chest is the Kaustubha jewel, engraved with a beautiful calf, and there are other jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. He is well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist and rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers. His leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair curling with bluish tint, and his beautiful smiling face are very pleasing. The Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glance of his smiling face are all indications of his extensive benedictions. One must therefore concentrate on this transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed on Him by meditation. So, his extensive benedictions. So one of our sannyasis was standing in the queue in Balaji, in Venkateshwar, in South India there. And, so two boys were just standing in front of me, started talking to them. And they just finished graduating with their BTEC or something like that. Some degree, university degrees. And he asked me, he said, well, why are you here? He said, oh, because after graduating, you want to come to Balaji, to get a good job in America, like that, some benediction like that, And he said, oh, and how much are you going to ask him for, on a salary? He said, oh, we're going to ask for, $20,000 a year, like that. And then the sannyasi was surprised. He said, well, he's the Lord of the universe, and you're coming just to ask for this? And the boy used to think, yes, said, you're right, yes. We should ask for $25,000. Yeah. So that's our stupid thing. Probably you take a worm and pull him out of the stool. What does he do? He crawls right back in again. So every day we have this opportunity to associate with Krishna by the mercy of devotees, saints. And what are we asking for? Can I give me time to rotate my tires today? Let me, all these things, But by hearing these high ideals, then we can chant and pray with very, very high ideals like that. Same thing. One old lady, she was very poor and didn't have any family to take care of her. And all she could do was go from her little village to where the woodcutters were, some distance, walking for maybe an hour and a half or something. And then she would barter with them for some cut wood. They'd tie it in a bundle and lift it onto her head, and she would walk back, And one day she was walking back, and she had to sleep in the market at night. And all the wood came undone and fell on the ground. And she couldn't put it back on her head by herself, and she's very disturbed. My life is so miserable. She's scratching the ground and saying, Narayan, 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 Narayan. So right in front of her, who appears? Narayan. He says, old lady, what do you want? And she says, put the wood back on my head. Yeah. Are you sure? Yes, please, please, put the wood back on my head. So we have to be careful, by association with Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj, Parikshit, it's coming down through Parampara, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, We can appreciate then these higher things, right? Why are we all suffering working like this when the Lord is willing to give extensive benedictions? So he goes on describing this, and if his meditation is proper, then one should sit properly. He's just describing this Ashtanga yoga system because it was practical at that time. He'll go to finer and finer, better yoga system, bhakti yoga purely. But fixing the life airs, you can gradually raise it up like that. And you're completely fasting, you're non-conscious of your body. The body becomes just like a very, very dry shell like that. And you can feel that. You start coming out like it's water coming out of a sponge, And it's funny, the prana is there. It's funny, you blast out of your head and your little blood and bone chips coming out. It's actually a fact. And you depart for Brahma Loka, right? Or the spiritual world. But he says, but if somebody has some desires still, some desires, okay, then go on with your journey, but see these things on the way and don't get confused. Don't become confused. Before Satya Yoga. O King, when the mystic passes over the Milky Way, we're going already on the journey now, by the illuminating Sushumna, to reach the highest planet, Brahmaloka, he goes first to Vaishvanara, the planet of the deity of fire, wherein he becomes cleansed of all contaminations. Thereafter, he still goes higher to the circle of Shishumaru, to be related with Lord Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. To write these purports, probably just take the commentaries of previous acharyas. They're in one book, Jiva Goswami, other people. And then put it together, for the proper circumstances. Prabhupada says, the polar star of the universe, and the circle thereof is called the Shishumara Circle. And there in the local residential planet of the Supreme Personality of God, Sri Dakshay Vishnu, is situated. Before reaching there, the mystic passes over the Milky Way to reach Brahmaloka. And while going there, he first reaches the Vaishvanara Loka where the demigod controls fire. On Vaishvanara Loka, the yogi becomes cleansed of all dirty sins acquired within contact with the material world. The Milky Way in the sky is indicated herein as the way leading to Brahmaloka, the highest planet in the universe. You know? So these things are very, you know, later on explains it more and more clearly. You know, this word loka, for example, is translated as planet. But you also have the word locus. What is the locus of all points? What is the locus of all points? The sum of which the distance from two points is a constant. Remember that one? Yeah. 2 points, eclipse. Yeah. It's the word locus, right? It's the word loka. You know, loka is probably coming from the Sanskrit word locus. The word dogma comes from the Sanskrit word dokine. The word God comes from the Sanskrit word hutan, which means shalagram shila. Yeah. Yeah, so Americans don't know they're worshiping the shalagram shila. Yeah. Yeah. Can you show me God? Yeah. Yeah. So Sanskrit's the original language. Yeah. So this, you know, dokaim, dogma, they got here. Oh, yeah, loka. Yeah, loka. So loka means realm. You know, like right now we're in the United States of America. That's one locus, one loka, United States of America. Where is it? Is it not a geographically limited place? Alaska's a part of it. Hawaii's part. I was born on Guam. Guam is also a part of the United States of America. Loka, right? Yeah. And you know, some airplanes flying in the air. If they declare war on, you know, I don't know, Poland or something like that. George Bush declared war on Poland. And then those airplanes are also part of that loka. Yeah. So then these lokas, Shishumara loka, these are different realms. And right now we're in the United States of America, and all that particular influence law relates here. It may not be so obvious because we're in somebody's apartment, we have certain rules and stuff we follow. But still, you know, we're part of that. We're in a specific portion. So right now we're in Bhumandal. You know, Bhumandal means the earthy level. Then directly above this is Gandharva loka. You know, it says higher, but what does higher mean? It means higher in a dimension of consciousness, of, you know, of less gross matter like that. When I was a little child, my brother was digging to plant some seeds, and I was looking and I was afraid the devil was going to come out because he was digging pretty deep like that. You know? You know? Because the devil's down there, and, you know, and God's up there, right? But higher doesn't mean that, you know, like a higher state of consciousness, a higher frequency. This room is full of radio waves, right? Cell phones, airplane communication, it's all here, but we can't see it. Even if everybody close your eyes now, okay, close your eyes, now suddenly we're on a different loka. You can still, you know, communicate, we can still be people, you can hear things. Okay, open your eyes. Sound is more subtle than touch. Touch is more subtle than vision. You know, different rules like this. So it's, you know, whole gradually explained in the Bhagavatam like that. You know? So he's talking about first time around, the yogi. He concentrates in the Supreme Lord, then he has to go through these things. And he goes through the level of fire, in our own body is fire, right? And you become purified of these different simple reactions, attachments like that, you know? Nobody's going to want to eat chicken. Colonel Sanders, Kentucky Fried Chicken, with all those pork chickens screaming and yelling in pain. Nobody's going to want to eat that if I'm burning you with fire, right? It's like, right? Because you're just... It's gone, that desire to enjoy the sensuous taste of the body. So he goes higher and higher, okay. And he's going to Shishu. This Shishumara is the pivot for the turning of the complete universe. And it is called the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. The yogi alone goes beyond this circle of Shishumara and attains the planet of Maharlok, where the purified saints like Bhrigu enjoy a duration of life of 100,000, million, billion, 4 billion, 300 million solar years. But you're still not immortal. Yeah. This planet is worshipable even by the saints who are transcendentally situated. Then finally, Satyaloka, where Brahma resides. In that Satyaloka planet where Brahma resides, like in that realm of existence, yeah, there is neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind. And therefore there are no anxieties, save that sometimes due to consciousness there is a feeling of compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service who are subjected to the insurpassable miseries of the material world. So anxiety in Brahmaloka is compassion for others down below, like that. It's like when you reach the level of George Bush Loka, right? You know, George Bush is driving in Boise, Idaho, and he's driving a little fast, and a little police officer pulls him over and looks at him and says, oh. Yeah, because George Bush, one time Richard Nixon, the newspaper reporters were just, you know, being kind of overly aggressive with him and stuff, and he said, you don't know who I am, do you? And this guy was kind of taken aback. He said, I can go in the next room and make one phone call, and in 45 minutes, 200 million people would be dead. Oh! So let me rephrase that question, sir, if you'd like to answer. Yeah. Or if I give your name to my secretary, your life will become hell on earth. Like that. And your gas bill won't work, everything you can imagine what it can do. So Brahma Loka, we're in Brahma Loka, but we've come absorbed in an inferior part, like that. Still, that's not the end. Okay. After reaching Satya Loka, the devotee is specifically able to be incorporated fearlessly by the subtle body in an identification similar to that of the gross body. And one after another, he gradually attains stages of existence from earthy to watery to fiery, glowing, and airy until he reaches the ethereal stage like that. This is a whole process of gradually going through these stages like that. And we have to do it. Yeah. The thing is that somehow or other, Brahmande Brahmite Kon Bhagyaban Ji Guru Krishna Prasade Poya Bhakti Ladavij. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing all this. He was a great pundit. He was defeating all the other scholars in Navadweep, all, you know, conquering Digvijay pundits. He knew all the Vedas perfectly. Of course, he's God, you know, he should know them. But then he was describing all this to Rupa Goswami. It's recorded in 19th chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he's describing all these different levels, you know, of existence, consciousness. And he says, somehow or other, somebody becomes situated beyond even fruitive activities in the name of religion to understanding mukti, liberation, jnana. At that point, when he's in that liberated state, Brahmande Brahmate Kon Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Paye Bhakti Lata Bija. What is a super cool liquid? Of all you scientists here. Huh? No, what is it? It's a general term. Super cooled liquid. No. It's a liquid that's taken down below its freezing point. It's a liquid still, but it's below its freezing point. If you have like very, very pure water, purified water in a fish tank, you keep dropping it, 0 degrees centigrade, nobody breathes, keep dropping. You get 10 degrees below centigrade, it still doesn't freeze. And you just take one little, you know, rock or something, very small crystal, and drop it. And it's a very nice experiment. It goes through like this, and behind it you can just see the crystals forming and the whole thing going and turning into ice like that. Yeah. So this is people like Sukadeva Goswami, the Four Kumaras, Vishuddha Sattva, austerities, you know, taking clothes from the street. I don't depend on anybody. Whatever God sends me. St. Francis was like this. He would go just with his followers to door to door and they would beg, whatever you have, a little bit of extra, even garbage you're throwing out, we'll just take that. And then, you know, always miserable things. But he said, but yes, we didn't have to cheat anybody or anything else. We just took what God gave us. What's on our plate now is God's meal. And his followers would kind of look, you know. Yeah. But he's in Shantaras with that. So some in that purified condition, if he comes in contact with God, devotional service, very rapidly, he becomes a devotee, you know, and surrenders unto him. Atmaramas chamunayo nirgranta apiukrame kurvanti ahoitakim bhaktim itam bhuto gunoharehe. Translation.
The self-realized souls, atmaramas chamunayo nirgranta.
Even the self-realized souls take pleasure in glorifying the Supreme Lord because he has so many transcendental qualities. This is describing why Sukadeva Goswami was hearing Hari Shrimad Bhagavatam. He was free. He was super cool water, like that. But when he heard about Bhagavatam, oh, this is not material. I know material. This is eternal, perfectly cognizant, you know, perfectly real, all the forms like that, and it's blissful. Satchitananda, you know. So it's describing here, after reaching Satya Loka, then what happens is the gross body is finished, then we start going through the psychological body. This gross body has a form, and we see chairs, we see houses, we see shirts, we see glasses, because there's a subtle form of these things, right? You know, somebody who's from the jungle in Brazil, you know, he'd never seen glasses before. He sees these things lying there. He wonders, what is this? You know, tastes it, smells it, like that, you know? Yeah. And then someone kind of puts it on his face, and he kind of, ooh, some interesting thing, you know? So he tries it, and oh, you know, some mystical power here, like that, you know? Yeah. So we see these things because there's a subtle world. Our mind is projecting this on this plain material energy like that. My background is in psychology. So many examples like that. So the Bhagavatam will go through these things again and again, until we actually can see this, perceive this, connect it to our own experiences in life. And it becomes, our intelligence becomes very purified. Yeah. We're chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. Oh, Narayan, let me go back to bed, to bed, to bed. Oh, Narayan, let me go back to bed. I don't want to get up so early. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know? Yeah. But let me chant this at different levels. My tongue is chanting, but with my mind chanting, you know, my mind's also engaged. You know? Subtle body. So finally we give up these gross bodies, called pratyahara in Patanjali's system. Everything is there that goes on in Astanga Yoga. Asana, pranayama, everything is there, right, by chanting like that. And dancing. Chatting, dancing, when you're tired, taking Krishna prasads, it's ready. Yeah. So it's describing, you know, this beautiful, you know, pathway out. After reaching Satya Loka, the devotee is specifically able to be incorporated fearlessly by the subtle body in an identity similar to that of the gross body. And one after another, he gradually attains the stages of existence from earth to water to fire to light to air, prana, and to space, right? Every body occupies space, right? And right now, if you're touching somebody else, raise your hand. Yeah? Okay. But you see very few people, right? Because we're maintaining our private American space. We've learned, you know? Yeah? Yeah, every Indian, when they come to America, you know, after about the first two or three days, someone takes you aside and says, you know, Rajiv, don't be offended, but we've been talking, and you stand a little bit too close to people, and we're feeling a little... You see, I know it's just a cultural thing, and we went to India, people would feel very cold like that and stuff, but I just thought I'd tell you, you can do what you want to do, but don't stand so close to people. Yeah. So in many studies in psychology about this, different cultures, the distance people take like that. So this is all produced from the mind. There's no, like, little sign that says, you know, keep this distance from your neighbor like that, you know? Yeah, yeah. And spatial orientation. Which way is the university? Yeah? 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 There's no sign on the wall that says university, right? Yeah? So he's carrying a little map around with him, right? Yeah? If he brought you here asleep and you woke up, you wouldn't know where you were. You wouldn't know if you're in Boise, Idaho, for that matter, right? Yeah? So you see? It's all there in the subtle body. Space. Space is created by us. Yeah? And so one after another, we give these things up. Yeah? And we become then, you know, free from all this subtle body as well. Okay. The devotee thus surpasses the subtle objects of different senses, like aroma for smelling, the palate for tasting. Yeah. The devotee surpasses the gross and subtle forms of the coverings and enters the plane of egoism. Yeah. And in that status, he merges the material modes of ignorance and passion in this point of neutralization and thus reaches egoism and goodness. You understand? Yeah. So I didn't understand. But you go on reading again and again. This is why there's 12 cantos. And it's explained again and again from different places like that. And finally, what happens is that you have a big box full of zeros, right? Yeah. Here's a check with, you know, I got a check from George Bush with, actually it was during Iraq war. And they were going to pay the Americans for all their expenses like that. They were kind of late on paying their bill, and you guys figured, well, maybe your Arabs are not going to pay us, you know? So finally the general, what is his name? Schwarzkopf?
Schwarzkopf.
Yeah, yeah. He called him over and said, hey, come on over, the check's ready, you know. So he went over and it was signed by the caliph of Saudi Arabia and his son. It was drawn on the Chase Manhattan Bank, and it was from something like, you know, $214,437,282.14, like that, you know. He couldn't believe it, you know. Take my check. So they called the bank, and the bank said, "How much was it for?" "Yeah, 200 million." "Yeah, that'll clear, no problem." You know. So then they took a picture with him with a check in front of themselves like that. Then he took it out and he called up the accounting office in Washington D.C. and the guys are counting it. "What do you got check for the caliph, $20 million?" "Well, I'll tell you what. Today is Thursday. If we can get into the bank by tomorrow morning, we're going to make $1,275,000 interest on it." So they took it down. They gave it to a fighter pilot, and he took off from Arabia and refueled over France and got there in time with doing the check-in like that. So some people have that right, that kind of credit in their account. I forgot why I was mentioning that point. Yeah. Fiery, subtle existences. Oh, yeah, okay. And it reaches the point of pure egoism. So we have all these, we have a big check from George Bush with all these zeros, you know. But when old George puts the one in front of all those zeros, you know. So I studied karate. It's a big zero. I'm not going to fight with you. I'll fight with Yamaraj at the time of death and win, right? Bruce Lee lost that one, right? Yeah. And I studied improvisational theater. It's all a big zero. And even Yamaraj's not going to be impressed, you know. Right? Studied psychology, so many things. I went through, like, I studied, you know, quantum mechanics at Berkeley, and it's all zero. But then I was beginning to see how it's all related to these things, right? I could, from the karate, I could understand what is prana and how actually we're separate from the body and stuff like that. From the improvisational theater, I was seeing how the mind creates personality. You can just become a different person on stage like that, you know? Yeah. And so from all these kind of things like that, you start to connect up. Everybody has experiences, right? You know, lady, you have experience of children growing up, right? And you see, yeah, that's how it develops. That's, yeah, I've seen that happen in a person growing like that. You know? So whatever our position is, everybody has to understand these things from their own position, really. You know? And then you become detached and you go to these different lokas, right? And, you know, we can stay in the same body, but we're on these different lokas now. That's what happens next. Okay. Now we're in the plane of pure egoism. And we merge the ignorance and passion into the neutral mode like that. Big long purport. Okay. Only the purified soul can attain the perfection of associating with the personality of Godhead in complete bliss and satisfaction in its constitutional position. Whoever is able to renovate such devotional perfection is never again attracted by the material world. He never returns. Yeah. Long purports. Probably realize these are incomprehensible without explanation. Your Majesty Maharaj Pariksit, Sukadeva Goswami said, know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna to Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. For those who are wandering in the material universe, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at in the direct devotional service of Lord Krishna. Bhagavan Brahma Karchnyena Trir Andviksha Manishaya. The great personality Brahma, with attention and concentration of the mind, studied the Veda three times, and after scrutinizingly examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna is the highest perfection of religion. Bhagavan Sarva Bhuteshu Lakshita Sarvatmana Hari Drishyair Budya Adibhir Brasta Lakshanair Anumapakhai. So we just read this, and this is a kind of finish here, long enough. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna is in every living being along with the individual soul. And in this fact, and this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. So this purport is a very famous purport. Actually, Prabhupada said, I wrote many of these purports just to deal with one topic. You find two purports related, and they make wonderful little standalone books, you know, things like that to answer questions. Prabhupada's purport. The general argument of the common man is that since the Lord is not visible to our eyes, how can one either surrender unto Him or render transcendental loving service unto Him? Okay? To such a common man, here is a practical suggestion given by Srila Sukadeva Goswami as to how one can perceive the Supreme Lord by reason and perception. This is science, reason and perception, rational empiricism. Actually, the Lord is not perceivable to our present materialized senses, but when one is convinced of the presence of the Lord by a practical service attitude, there is a revelation by the Lord's mercy. And such a pure devotee of the Lord can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. He can perceive that intelligence is the form direction of the Paramatma, plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. The presence of the Paramatma in everyone's company is not very difficult to realize, even for the common man. The procedure is as follows. Okay. One can perceive one's self-identification and feel positively that he exists. It's okay? Everybody here feels they exist?
Yeah.
Okay. Where is it here? Yeah. He may not feel it very abruptly, but by using a little intelligence and stop drinking beer and smoking cigarettes, you know, he can feel that he is not the body. Yeah. Okay, it's a little later. I remember before I ever became a devotee, different circumstances, I was hearing something about this and some words about this and indication and, yeah, something else. The body, sometimes you'll control your senses. You have a, you know, very, very valuable teacup, right? And the tea is too hot. So you don't like drop it, you know, or a hot pot of something. You hold it and you force yourself. Okay, I'm not the body. The body would have dropped this, but I'm making the body do this, right? I'm making the body fast. Uh-huh. Okay. He can feel he's not the body. He can feel that the hand, the leg, the head, the hair, and the limbs are all his bodily parts and parcels. But as such, the hand, the leg, the head, etc., cannot be identified with the self. Therefore, just by using intelligence, he can distinguish and separate his self from other things that he sees. That's my intelligence. This is again as a meditation. Every religion, every culture, they have, you know, some kind of discussion about this. So the natural conclusion is that the living entity, either man or beast, is a seer, right? The seer, and he sees besides himself all other things. So there is a difference between the seer and the seen. You know, Bishop Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley in San Francisco, was named after him. He said the same thing. He said, "We see everything. We're conscious of everything. We're conscious of our thoughts, you know, but God is conscious of us also." It's the same as Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, Kshetra Kshetra Gnyor, like that. It's the same comprehension. Yeah. Now, by a little use of intelligence, we can also readily agree that the living being who sees the things beyond himself by ordinary vision has no power to see or move independently. All our individual actions and perceptions depend upon various forms of energy supplied to us by nature in various combinations. If you have no light, you can't see anything, right? Our senses of perception and action, that is to say, our five perceptive senses, hearing, touch, sight, taste, smell, as well as our five senses of action, hands, legs, speech, evacuation organs, reproductive organs, and also three subtle senses, mind, intelligence, and ego, 13 senses in all, are supplied to us by various arrangements of gross and subtle forms of material energy. I mean, you're giving a presentation in front of Micron or Microsoft, and you're not quite ready, Albertsons, and you're not quite ready, and you know you're a little nervous, and somebody asks a difficult question, and the answer pops into your head. Ever had that experience? Right? Or else you charge some too much in the credit card, and your husband's going to try and catch you, and yeah, some lie comes into your head, you know, like that. Right? Yeah. Put a flower under it. That will form a proper baffling procedure. A sticky flower. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, here comes a flower for Krishna. Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. So we can actually, if you become a little bit introspective, you can see your thoughts are coming, and you don't, you know, where is the snow coming from? Where is the sunny days coming from? Where are the cloudy days coming from? Where do you, different cars that appear in your vision and go away, right? So where are the thoughts coming from? Same thing, you appreciate that they're also just coming. You know, something is actually sending them or organizing this. Yeah. Yeah. Are all supplied to us by various agents of gross and subtle forms of natural energy. And it is equally evident that our objects of perception are nothing but products of the inexhaustible permutations and combinations of the forms that taken by material energy. As this conclusively proves that the ordinary living being has no independent power of perception or motion, and we undoubtedly feel our existence being conditioned by material energy, by nature's energy, we conclude that he who sees is spirit, and the senses as well as the objects of perception are material. The spiritual quality of the seer is manifested in our dissatisfaction with a limited state of materially conditioned existence. We're looking for so many things. We're just not satisfied, you know, with the material world. And because of that, we try and kill our desires by intoxication, television, something to kill, you know, junk food, to kill this spiritual hankering for something very high like that. That is the difference between spirit and matter. There are some less intelligent arguments that matter develops the power of seeing and moving at a certain organic development. Thus, such an argument cannot be accepted because there is no experimental evidence that matter has anywhere produced a living entity. Right? You know, people talk about this. You can talk about different ideas, suggestions, but this is not science. Science means experiment and result. You can make so many hypotheses, you know, hypothesis. Yeah? My hypothesis is that while we've been in here, there's been a strange result because of solar flares and all the roads in Berkeley, all the words in Boise, roads in Boise, Idaho, have turned to green cheese, right? And I'll give you a whole pathway to explain how this is going to happen. Yeah, speculation. Trust no future, however pleasant. Idle talks regarding future development of matter into spirit are actually foolish, because no matter has ever developed the power of seeing or moving in any part of the world. Therefore, it is definite that matter and spirit are two different identities, and this conclusion is arrived at by the use of intelligence. Now we come to the point that the things which are seen by a little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as the user or director of the intelligence. Intelligence gives one direction, like some higher authority. And the living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence. When one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged man. And so a living being is dependent on intelligence or the direction of a superior being. Such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living being has his intelligence. And this intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, is like a father giving direction to his son. The higher authority who is present and residing within every living being is a super soul. Right? Look around you. Everybody has intelligence, right? I mean, even dogs, cats, you see, they all have, you know, amazing. I mean, for example, on the airplane that was coming back, it was like some Discovery Channel type thing playing. And it was about the whole world in one day or something. And it was showing, I may have mentioned this before, it was like in Africa, there's all these deer running around, herds. And of course, they're kind of dog, almost like wolves, but smaller, that live on them. That's the way they live, by nature's arrangement. So they're all running down the path, you know, through the jungle together to go hunting. And it's one behind each other like that. It's a strict line like that, just running, you know, like that. So they have some intelligence to get behind each other and do that, right? And they get at a certain point, then one goes left, one goes right. One goes left, one goes right. One goes left, and it's just divide up, like some intelligently trained soldiers. Then they all surround the herd like that at a distance, position themselves in pairs and stuff. Then at some point, then some of the guys start howling and start driving this herd, attack it. It starts running. When it's running, then they start to separate and stuff like that, and weaker ones come out. And then whichever way they go, there's some dogs waiting there to attack them. They go for the throat. So then it showed like one of the deer was running, you know. And at that point, they say it's a 50-50 chance of escape. Actually, it was a younger deer like that. So even when they're born, they can run, you know. So a little bit older, he was running. And said if he doesn't lose his footing, and after about 1 kilometer, 2 kilometers, the dogs will give up and he'll escape. But a 50-50 chance at this point, you know. But he's running, and finally he's starting to lose it. They're getting closer. He goes into the water, swimming out there, and the dogs wait. They're watching because they know he can't stay there. He's waiting, you know. And so then they hear some of the other dogs howling back there, you know, wah, 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 which means like dinner's ready. So they all run back. And they have this thing, they share their food, they share their kill. It's not a social agreement, some contract they voted on, right? So they go run back, and they kill about one deer a day, and they rip it open and eat this and that, and sit around and watch. And lions spend a lot of time just sitting, looking into the distance, hours, just sit there like this, you know, kind of staring at things, digesting their lunch, which is, you know, pretty hard. You know? So we can see everywhere there's intelligence. Things are being guided like that. You know, meteorology is studying the intelligence in the clouds, right? ichthyology is studying the intelligence organization in
fish.
Okay, all these different things everywhere. You know, so what is this intelligence? He's saying this is the super soul giving advice. At this point in our investigation, we may consider the following question. Two more paragraphs here. On the one hand, we realize that all our perceptions and activities are conditioned by arrangements of material nature. Yet we also ordinarily feel and say, I am perceiving, I am doing. Therefore, we can say that our sense of material senses of perception and action are moving because we are identifying the self with the material body, and that the superior principle of the Supersoul is guiding and supplying us according to our desire. Taking advantage of the guidance of the Superself in the form of intelligence, we can either continue to study and to put into action our practice our conclusion that I am not this body, or we can choose to remain in the false material identification, right? Fancying ourselves to be the possessors and doers. Our freedom consists in orienting our desires toward the ignorant material misconception or the true spiritual conception. We can easily attain to the true spiritual conception by recognizing the Supersoul Paramatma to be our friend and guide, and by dovetailing our intelligence with the superior intelligence of the Paramatma. The Superself and individual self are both spirit, and therefore the Superself and the individual self are both qualitatively one and distinct from matter. But the Superself and the individual self cannot be equal in every level, because the Superself gives direction or supplies intelligence, and the individual self follows the direction. Unless actions are performed properly, the individual is completely dependent on the direction of the Superself, because in every step the individual self follows the direction of the Superself in the matter of seeing, hearing, thinking, willing, etc. Like, so you actually realize these things by chanting, by following this process, you know, taking prasadam, dancing. But yeah, I'm dancing, but, you know, it's pranayama, pratyahara, but who is, something else is guiding me. How much am I actually doing? It gives the example, like a little child may sit on his father's lap. He wants to drive the car. So his father maybe goes to some big empty parking lot, and they go this way and that way, and his son holds the steering wheel a little bit, and he understands where he wants to go. He picks up his feelings, and that way he thinks I'm driving. So we're situated in the prana, the life airs in the body, and the Paramatma is sensing our desires like that, and he's manipulating everything for us like that. And we think, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But not our actual position in relating to matter. Krishna wants us to relate to him, and it's natural for us. So he's trying to give us advice. I wish I knew it. There's one beautiful prayer on one Christian cross, and it says, I am that friend who you will obey. I am something other, like, you know, all these things like you're turning away, you know. And I am that your counselor, but you will not heed me, you know. It goes, and it says, and therefore, seal up your soul with tears and never blame me. One after another is very good. Because, you know, I am the friend you will betray. I am your husband, but you turn away. it's very nice. It's very poignant things in life about how we have these choices, and we're like, you know, not taking shelter of them, you know. And I'm the counselor who you will not obey. Then seal up your soul with tears and never blame me. That rhymes like that. That's the situation he's saying. We have this choice. We come to this position of realizing this human form of life right now. Yes, I'm being guided out of this mess, but I want to stay in this illusion. You know, oh, Narayan, put all the sticks back on my head. Right? We can't blame Narayan. So far as common sense is concerned, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities. What are they? Matter, individual spirit, yeah, and super spirit. Prabhupada said, preaching in the modern atmosphere, the university atmosphere, the intellectual atmosphere, this is what you have to explain to people. What is matter? You may use quantum mechanics, you may use examples from cooking, but everything, understand, oh, matter is insufficient to explain everything. You know, where did this beautiful cake come from? These beautiful samosas? Oh, they just happened by chance. You know? No, there's a spirit behind them. Oh, yours are spirited cooking. Yeah. Yeah. And then we have to understand prakriti, atma, and Jivatma and Paramatma. And Prabhupada's saying the way the modern world exists, that's all you need to explain in the university environment like that. And he says after that, people will naturally, if they're inclined, find Bhagavan in their own religion. They'll talk to you personally. I was giving a big university lecture in Peru one time. I go like this, you know. And so one person was asking me then, you know, it was an academic lecture. So what about God and this and that, you know? And I was saying, well, this, you know, this is a very, very nice topic. And of course, I'm sure many people here have their own ideas and thoughts about that. And I wouldn't mind discussing mine with you like that. But right here, you know, it's kind of out of the range of this present conversation like that in the university like that. And I kind of looked over at the head of the department and the dean were there. And they were both smiling. We don't discuss those things here. Yes, okay. He knows how to play the game like that, you know. But this is a very practical atmosphere. Even in Micron, Albertson, we've done the same thing in Microsoft. You don't go beyond. And Paramatma means intuition, insight, inspiration. And any engineer, any scientist will accept, yes, that's a part of science. You talk about rational thought and everything else, but some people are very intuitive, insightful. And how do you stimulate that? How do you develop that kind of consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so far as common sense, we can see these three things. Matter, individual spirit, supreme spirit. And all depend on the supreme personality of Godhead. The super self is a partial representation or plenary portion of the supreme personality of Godhead. The Bhagavad Gita affirms that the supreme personality of Godhead dominates all over the material world by his partial representation only. God is great, and he cannot be simply an order supplier of the individual selves. Therefore, the super self cannot be a full representation of the supreme self, Purushottam, the absolute personality of Godhead. Realization of the super self by the individual soul is the beginning of self-realization. And by the progress of such self-realization, one is able to realize the supreme personality of Godhead by intelligence, by the help of authorized scriptures, and principally by the grace of the Lord, His divine grace, Asi Bhaktivedanta Swami Gita. So this is the point, is you have to have at that point descending knowledge, right? You know, Socrates says the same thing. He gives all this rational explanation in the last dialogue. And they say, but still we're afraid that we're this body. Don't drink the poison yet. And he says, yes, you cannot come to a perfect conclusion just by jnana. You know, how pure you are, how rational, how investigative. He says you have to apply every day the words of a self-realized philosopher. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. And by hearing from him, that stimulates our personal relationship with God. And that personal relationship, then you know. You know, you may be under George Bush's laws when you're in America. You're kind of grateful for this guy, whoever he is, like that. You may be on the White House staff, and he's dealing with you like a staff person. But at some point, he's sitting behind his desk, and you go over some papers, and he kind of looks up at you, and you look at him, and you just kind of spontaneously say, he says, your job's really tough, sir. And he says, yeah, it is, you know. At that point, there's something I've touched this person, his most intimate aspect, and I know who he is. He's a person who really cares about what he's doing. From that point on, you're willing to follow him in whatever it takes, like that. So this point of his personal relationship, person to person, is what confidentially assures us of risking everything. It says fearlessly, incorporated like that. Less descending knowledge, by the scriptures, which are the mercy of God, they talk about God. And that's where we did it again here. But by the help of authorized scriptures and principally by the grace of the Lord. That's why the Guru is called his divine grace. The Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary conception of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the further explanation of the science of Godhead. So if we stick to our determination and pray for the mercy of the director of intelligence sitting within the same bodily tree, like a bird sitting with another bird, as explained in the Upanishads, certainly the purport of the revealed information in the Vedas becomes clear to our vision, and there is no difficulty in realizing the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Maybe Prabhupada's talking very carefully here, because Vasudeva is in Vaikuntha, but it's not Krishna in Goloka. The intelligent man, therefore, after many, many births, of such use of intelligence surrenders himself at the lotus feet of Vasudeva, as confirmed by Bhagavad Gita. What verse number? 7:19. You know, 9 - 1 = 8. 7, 8. Yeah, like that. But then after that, you can go to Vaikuntha forever. Mai bhakti hi bhutanam amritat vayakalpate. Anybody who does bhakti, sadhana, follows these principles, he goes to Vaikuntha forever to be with Krishna, Satchitananda. But if you want to go to Goloka, then you have to take shelter of the Brijbasis and get their association by their mercy only. You know? So it's a great science, Srimad Bhagavatam. In the second canto, it's very nice. You read it systematically, and you begin to appreciate these things. It starts to become clear, and your intelligence becomes purified. You deal with all these different situations like that. You can. Today we went to the prison with Chandra. There's prisoners there. And I was, you know, I was looking at these people. They seem like ordinary people. But his prisons were for the, you know, people that are multiple murderers and multiple rapists and everything else. And all these guys there, you're looking, it's like, you know, looking around the room where everybody here was either raped somebody or murdered somebody, you know, like that. You know, it's like, you know, it's kind of looking at everybody like that. You know. And anyway, before you go in, you sign the thing saying, yes, I know, I may be attacked or held hostage, you know. And you will get the, emergency alarm button?
Body alarm.
A body alarm, which if somebody goes off, you push this button and all over the place are these alarms, and immediately the SWAT squad descends from the sky or something. if somebody pushes one of those things, what happens?
Response team.
They're sitting there in their chairs and, you know, drug limbo, and suddenly they leap out and come like that, you know. Yeah. So, but then I was realizing the same thing, that you know, I was attached to my senses and my sense reaction. If some guy acts in a weird fashion, I won't, you know, because it's like a dog. You go into someone's house and the dog kind of looks at you. And, if you react with fear, what happens? The dog attacks you. But if you act like, you know, superior and stuff like that, then, you know, yeah. So anyway, I was just kind of detaching myself from my senses not to react if somebody starts, like, you know, looking at me strange or something like that. So yoga, done that. I can see how I can do that. And the next thing is, if you start talking to somebody and you start interacting physically, chanting and dancing, then what happens? You begin to go below the surface and you begin to find out what the person is like that. In many cases, probably what's happened, these people have some kind of very, you know, very, very difficult, usually the people we were dealing with weren't bad people. They were allowed to come into this program like that. But somehow or other, they have some subroutine in their intelligence, which, when stimulated, goes violent like that. You know, maybe in their last lifetime, they were horribly abused as children, screaming and yelling in fear and terror, and adults using their intelligence to torture this child out of its own sadistic thing. So that in one lifetime, it wasn't enough to get free from that. So you die, you're born again. The same thing is there. And so you react to certain situations. You react just like a madman, you know? So yeah, you've got to be incarcerated. Yeah. So you can begin to investigate the intelligence by sound. You know, we penetrate, we go deeply like that, and then by body language, which is dancing. These two things, the subtlest material elements like that. And from that, then we're connected on the mental level. And actually, we can get off the mental level, the physical level, and be directly connected on the mental level. You can leave your body, okay? But that's dangerous. it's like, you know. Get out of my boat and get. Yeah, but it's a whole world. At that point, you can directly perceive psychological reality like that. And on it goes like that. Yeah? And Srimad Bhagavatam is sufficient. Yeah? It's a Maha Mantra, Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. So, any questions? Koi prashna hai? Yeah.
You said that the super soul dies. The father, a child is requested.
I read that. Yeah.
So, like those who are surrendered, and chanting Hare Krishna for the principle, and those who are not, they are not chanting, they are not, they are averse to God, they don't think about God.
Yeah.
So, in both two different cases, how super soul guides? Is it like a favorable or just adjust? Super soul is like, what is the role of super soul in those two?
No, cases? In every case, the nothing exists without the Paramatma. In the beginning is Prakriti. Okay, the Pradhan. Pradhan exists eternally with Mahavishnu in the spiritual world, but it's not manifest like this is Pradhan. So then Mahavishnu expands himself as Shiradakshai Vishnu. Same person. He enters into the Pradhan and, hello, Hari Bol. Are we having pizza tonight? I don't know. Want me to ask? I'll ask for you. Okay, Hare Krishna. Yeah. So externally, we see him as a time factor, creating all these things. By time is causing everything to happen. Even the modern theory of evolution is based upon time, you know, time and chance. You know. So the pradhan then manifests these forms like prakriti like that. So nothing exists without the paramatma. Right? What is the gross world you see, the world you smell, the world of thoughts, he's also maintaining those, producing like that. So then for somebody who wants to go on this material world, who's adverse to him, if you're really adverse to him, he gives you the intelligence to return to the body of Mahavishnu and go into this comatose state. And just stay there, you know, like that. But if you're willing to be a little bit, you know, for fragrance of surrender, then he allows you to go to the material world. And you have all these experiences then where you can, you know, experience things and slowly, again, example psychology, somebody's a paranoid schizophrenic. You know, people at work are talking about me. I'm going to quit that job. Oh, next job too. My wife and family are talking about me. They're my enemies. My wife's putting poison in the food. Oh, I can't stay here. You know, so and finally you lose your faith in the psychologist too, right? So you become, you know, autistic. That's Mahavishnu's body. You stay there, right? But okay, the psychologist starts giving you sodium pentothal. It's an old traditional guy. So you start hallucinating. He starts listening, taking notes. Something to do with women and children and something, water, you know. Okay, little by little. And maybe he brings a glass of water in your room and see what the reaction is. You know? So that's what's happening. We're all in psychotherapy here. Right? And now you try this role, now you try that role, now you try this, now you try that. So Super Soul is directing us, you know, how to go on with this delusion, this insanity, like that. Kesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam. But somebody who's surrendered to the process of sadhana bhakti, that's a scientific level, either under the Prophet Muhammad or Buddha or somebody, everybody's giving a sadhana, right? You're following that authorized process, the dhammi buddhi yogam tam. Then he gives us the knowledge by which we can, you know, progress like that, to the Bhagavan realization purely, right? So he's always guiding us, always. Right? But some people want this advice, some people want that advice. Yeah. And that's why that form doesn't exist in the spiritual world, because it's guidance, it's sadhanchit. It exists, there's guidance, but there's no ananda. You can't have a relationship with a super soul. Yeah. If you are, it's through him to Krishna.
You were mentioning how when we see God face to face, we ask for material desire.
Yeah.
How he can give us much more.
But yeah.
Sometimes when we feel completely distressed and we ask for God just take me out of this world, he doesn't take us out of this world because maybe our desire is not very sincere. We still have some change.
Yeah, because what is our idea of take me out of this world? The woman's on the ground with the wood there. Take me out of this world. What world do you want to go to? I wanted to go to the world with my productive, fruitive activities. Mm. You know, so most people's idea of leaving this world is to go to heaven and, you know, where ice cream is free and, it's kind of like Indraloka. The Vedas are describing many places Indraloka as being the goal like that, you know. Because some people, something better. You know? Yeah. Take me out of this world, okay? Mm-hmm. That means no body, no air. Are you sure you want this? Oh, I changed my mind. There's no air on that level. Even on Maharloka, there's no air. Yeah. Yeah.
But then, even as a devotee, he's asking, please take me to Vaikunth Loka.
Yeah.
But
so I can enjoy there.
Yeah. Well, so I cannot suffer. He's suffering so much. He's saying, just take me off. But
yeah.
So his desire is not pure enough. So, but it's the reason his desire may not be pure enough is because. Basically, my question is. Why?
It's mathematics, right? If you can frame the question properly, the answer is already there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he's trying to. At one point, he's very sincere. At just please take me back to the spiritual world, to your lotus feet.
Yeah.
But if Krishna is sincerely, he wants us to come back.
Yeah.
Why does he not take us out at that moment?
No, because we don't want to. Again, it's the same thing. You're saying, please take me back to the spiritual world. And you say, well, the first thing you have to do is stop breathing. You say, well, I'm really attached to breathing. Yeah. Yeah. So our idea is take me back to the spiritual world, but our idea of the spiritual world is that I'll be at Krishna's feet playing with my toys and enjoying myself. Spiritual world means uninterrupted austerity. Yeah, you want to go there? Well, no, actually, the second vital. Miserable. My first temple president, Bhaktadas, he got a book. He was a Marxist. He was arguing with this devotee. He kept losing. He was in the university. The devotee defeated him again and again. So he felt as an honest man, he had to buy the book, you know. So he started reading the book, you know, like that, you know, for like several days. And he said something was bothering him, you know. And finally, he realized what it was. He said all the rest of the books he read, like Marxism or yoga, is yes, you must do this austerity to conquer the evil capitalists. Yes, you must do this austerity to conquer your mind. And then you enjoy, right? But in Prabhupada's books, this enjoyment thing wasn't coming. Yeah, he just kept, right? He just kept turning the pages and there's more austerities, one after another, you know? No. And at that point, it was a big ontological thing for him. Like Prabhupada says, at that point, we can surrender to the super soul or not, you know? And again, it's coming in levels, you know? So at that point, he actually made this decision. He was ready, his spirit, soul, many lifetimes. Yeah, yes, I can exist in this atmosphere. This is a fact. This is just better. It's just superior. It's superior to be a giver than a taker. And I can exist. I can go on reading this book, at least to the end of the book. You know, I know that, you know. Okay, so I'll do that. And after that, oh, this is Canto 2, this is Canto 3. And we begin to realize, in such a deep way that you can't even express it logically, you know, that this is who I am. Yeah? This is who I am. Like that. And nothing can cover that at all because it's so intimate. It's just like that. Yeah? So in the beginning, it's our desire is to take me out of this place, means, you know, take me to Hawaii or something like that, you know, Indraloka. But as we go on, and we realize I don't even want air. Yes, I mean, it's a very high level. I can exist just on sound. You know, you see, I'm an angel. You know, and of course that level is more rich, more full of variety than this world, like that. Okay. Any questions? No, it's kind of. So you gotta thank everybody. Tomorrow also got a program in the temple, right? It's like a Sunday program. Talk a little more, and maybe you can show the movie tomorrow, The Bed of Arrows. Yes. Yeah, because we're trying to present these things culturally to people can appreciate them in different ways, ourselves, other people. So in Peru, we've been having this big program down there with big universities, the ambassador. So as part of the last program, we did a movie on the disappearance of Bhishma Dev, you know, as part of the first two cantos. And I hope it's going to run tomorrow. And it's a very nice presentation. It's an avant-garde film, but it's with images by a very good director down there, a very nice person. And then I guess that's just about it. Yeah, and Monday we'll be here. Monday we're going to go to the university and find a little program there, maybe with them.
Sunday afternoon we have a program with Voice of Life, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, very short. Yeah. And so then Tuesday will be, I guess, programs in the morning, Monday and Tuesday, maybe something like that, a little bit like that. And Tuesday we'll be flying, going to fly to Reno, and then to San Jose. So 2 weeks in San Francisco. 2 weeks in Seattle, Vancouver, 1 week in Tennessee, 2 weeks in Buenos Aires, 1 month in Lima, and back again. Yeah, we're always coming and going like that. It's a good opportunity. I just want to thank everybody. It was a very nice program here, and we're trying to become purified as well.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So let's chant a little more and try and distinguish now all this information. Now try and chant to distinguish the super soul and the soul. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrinda
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Gopal Govinda Ram, Sri Madhusudan. Gopal Govinda Ram, Sri Madhusudan. Giridhari Gopinath Narayana Mohan. Madana Mohana, Madana Mohana. Madana Bihari, Madana Bihari. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Banki Bihari, Banki Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai, Radhani Ki Jai. So now we should honor the Lord's prasadam and then read the Krishna book and fall asleep and dream about Krishna. Prabhupada Ki Jai.